Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And, you know, it's always fun for me when I can do a show where every single guest that's on here is going to give us information that I myself want to know about. So, you know, that's one of the perks of the job, I think. I get to go out and hunt up really interesting people who can teach us something new, different, or at least new and different to a lot of us, I'm hoping. So, you know, have you ever been working with your fabric and you just don't have the right color? Whatever the issue is, you know, you're not finding the right shade, a transition fabric, whatever it is. Well, I thought it'd be really great to bring on a textile dyer, quilter extraordinaire who works with dyeing fabric all the time to tell us a little bit about her process and what we can do. So I asked Lisa White Reber of DippityDyes.com. to come on here and chat dyeing with us. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
This is really fun. You know, so many of us really, you know, love fabric. That's why we do all this, and we love color and all that, but we can't always find the right thing. You know, is that how you started dyeing? Did you need the right color?
I started dyeing because I thought the process looked like fun. My sister went to college in the late 60s, and of course she brought home some dyeing to me, and then I left it alone for almost 30 years. And then I saw Fonz and Porter on the PBS show making buckets of solid colored fabrics, and I said, that looks like fun. And it took off from there.
So one of the fun things that you have on your blog that, you know, it just sort of made me chuckle was your about, you know, the little part that says about you, and you're saying, you know, am I a quilter who dyes or a dyer who quilts? You know, really, it's a, sounds like you are evenly distributed between that thought.
Yeah, it's hard some days to decide anymore. I spend so much time dyeing that I don't have a lot of time to quilt. So I think I'm a dyer who quilts this year.
This year, right.
This year.
And, you know, you can always change that ratio, can't you?
That's right.
Get in a bit more quilting if you need to. So we're going to walk through, you know, I put your little PDF that you sent me, the one with the snow dyeing, up on my blog. So people may have read that already before the show. But let's talk about different types of dyeing, because there are just so many ways. I mean, I've done Rit dye, and I've done some other dyes in jars, you know, with more powerful chemicals. You know, what are some of the most common ways that people, the average quilter, could dye their own fabric?
I started with Rit dyes, like a lot of people, you know, 40 years ago, and compared with the kind of dyes that you can get for dyeing cottons for quilters, which are called Procyon MX types, you just don't want to bother with Rit. It's actually, 40 years ago especially, it was more dangerous than what we have now in the MX dyes. And, you know, it's good for what it does, but for quilters it's not really what you want. MX dyes can be dyed at room temperature. And there's so many colors. You could the dye suppliers provide all kinds of pre-mixed colors if you don't want to get into mixing your own. And if you do, you can.
Well, that's really cool. Because, you know, when I did it with the classroom, we did the Procyon and we did gradations. And that was a lot of fun. And the teacher brought all her dyes. So, you know, we didn't have to go in and purchase them. Why don't we start first with the snow dyeing? Because you and I first connected because I read, you know, your article. You were on some internet list together, and it was like, oh my gosh, well, it's January, and a lot of people have snow, and I thought this would just be perfect. So first explain what that is, snow dyeing.
Snow dyeing actually involves using snow. I read about it on a blog called Bunk's Blog, so I have to give her credit because now I'm doing, you know, 25 yards at a shot, and I thank her very much. But use the same ingredients that you do for, you know, the gradations that you made. You have mm-hmm. cotton fabric, soda ash solution, mm-hmm. Which is basically the ingredient that's one of the main ingredients in powdered laundry soaps. It's not a dangerous chemical. You put it in pools to raise the pH.
Okay.
And MX dyes.
Mm-hmm.
You make a solution of soda ash and water, soak your fabric, mm-hmm. wring it out, scrunch it up on a screen, this is the way I do it, and then mm-hmm. put snow on top or crushed ice. People use ice mm-hmm. shavers. Then you take a dye stock, not powdered dye out of the jar,
right.
but you mix it up with water.
Okay.
Pour it on the snow. It looks mm-hmm. like a snow cone. You mm-hmm. don't want to eat it.
No eating.
No eating.
Yes.
And then you sit there and wait for it to melt. And the fabric that comes out is just, you can't get the results any other way. It doesn't look like the kind of crunchy, crackly looking hand dyes mm-hmm. that you see oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
The texture, visual texture that comes out is more like flames or feathers or something like
wow.
that. Just, it's because of the way that dye drips through the snow.
Right. Right. Oh, so it's going to have heavier concentrations on part of the fabric. Is that how you get sort of those variations of color? And
I'll drip any. I'll throw the whole pot of colors at it. Sometimes depends. You get some really neat results.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way the colors blend with each other. You can also take a pre-mixed color from the dye house, like orange. Well, mm-hmm. some oranges. It will be made out of yellow and red. Pour it on, and you'll get orange areas, you'll get yellow areas, and you'll get red areas because the colors split as they go onto the fabric.
Oh.
So cool. It's very neat. It's very unpredictable. And I love it, and my customers seem to like it, too.
Well, tell me a little bit, Lisa, about like the containers and things you need to use, because I know one thing when I was just doing the RIT dye, I mean, I was really adamant, you know, nobody uses anything they're ever going to put food in again, you know, that kind of thing. Tell me what kind of supplies, I guess that's where I'm going. You know, what supplies mm-hmm. does your average person need to sort of start exploring dyeing?
I started out with cups from the dollar store, you know, Bob and Mary's diner. Decided they weren't going to pay for their 100 cups or something, so I just got a cheap container of plastic cups that are white.
That's funny.
Yeah, because I'm cheap. And then since then I've moved on. The dollar store still gets a lot of business, but since I'm doing bigger pieces of fabric, I like dish pans that I get at the grocery. Mm-hmm. I try to buy everything in white just because I can see the color on the fabric better.
So it's all plastic, though, right? Plastic's
all plastic.
Okay?
The only time I use non-plastic are some processes require that you put them on a burner. So, you know, plastic's just not going to work.
Oh, no, that wouldn't be a good option
not
there.
Good,
yeah.
No. So I have a couple pots that I picked up at the Salvation Army, places like that, that are mm-hmm. stainless. And
okay.
stock pots that I've tried to buy cheap as possible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And enamel works well, too.
So, let's talk about the vat dyeing that
mm-hmm.
That you have. You know, you and I chatted about that also because that's a different kind of dyeing. But wait a second, before we talk about that, why don't you? Yeah, I know. I'm sort of like, you have so much information, Lisa. I'm trying to sort of channel us to tell people how to get started. Maybe that might be what would be the best method for someone who's never dyed, and you know, the snow dyeing sounds really fun, but can they jump right in there, or should they try something else first? What are the basic things they need?
I got spurred on by the TV program on PBS, and then
right.
I picked up a book at a quilt show. The one that I and an awful lot of dyers really swear by is called Color by Accident.
Okay.
It's by Ann Johnston. And
it
gives you all kinds of suggestions and different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
You could take a class
mm-hmm.
if there's one being offered locally. I'm going to be teaching one in a couple months.
I saw that on your blog. You're in,
yeah.
Where are you at in a couple months?
It's at the Quilt Fest of New Jersey, the first weekend in March, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay.
So people who haven't tried, you know, some people want a person there. Some people like to learn from the video, you know, internet, from books. Everybody has their own method. Prochemical and Dye and Dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A, Trading are two suppliers of the MX dye powders, and they have all kinds of great free information on their websites.
Oh, good.
So that's another resource. And there's a couple good lists on the internet, too.
Now, the fabric, do you need to use, I know there's fabric, you know, prepared for dyeing. You know, it has this, there's special, but can you use other fabric you own?
It depends. there's, for the MX dyes, you need a cellulose. MX is never going to work on polyester, and it's not really what you want to use on wool. So we're talking about cotton, linen, hemp, rami. For quilters, cotton.
Okay.
If it's a cotton blend with polyester, you'll get different results. If it has a permanent press finish and you want to dye it, don't go there. Period.
All right.
It can be done, but not for a beginner. You're just going to frustrate yourself.
Right, right.
So,
how do I know if it's permanent press or not?
If you were at Joann's and you were looking at the white or the muslins, read the end of the bolt.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think Joann's is a good place for a lot of people to start just because it's within everybody's budget. And then when you get addicted, if you do, then you can start buying specific PFD fabrics.
Right.
I sell them on my website. We're not trying to make this whole thing commercial, but I have them.
You do have it available if they can't find it. Yeah.
Right.
So that's good. So listen, hey, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And what we're going to do, we're going to come back, is I want to talk about that vat dyeing and then a little bit about other types of materials besides cotton. And we'll, you know, we'll get a couple of questions that you are most often asked and then find out what you're up to, okay?
Great. Thanks, Pat.
Okay, so everybody, will be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio in a minute.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Beautiful computerized quilting is simple with the HQ Pro Stitcher. Every design becomes a perfect fit for your quilt with the HQ Pro Stitcher. You can resize, repeat, rotate, and crop right on the new 10-inch color touchscreen. No computer needed. The HQ Pro Stitcher works with all HQ Stitch regulated machines and has a quick setup that allows you to get quilting in no time.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter for quilters.
Make your projects so much easier with great products from Sewline. Sewline offers a variety of innovative quality marking tools for quilters and sewers. The Sewline Trio is a 3-in-1 fabric marking tool that allows you to quickly change from black ceramic to white lead to a blank stylus with just one click. Both leads are water-soluble and designed to provide a crisp, clean line that's easy to erase. To purchase Sewline products, visit your local quilt shop.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com. Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Well, welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm here with Lisa Reber of Dippity Dyes, and she is telling us all about how to get into dyeing and a couple different things. So, Lisa, we know we need some plastic containers, maybe some metal containers. We need some dyes. Then we can get some fabric that's not permanent press, and we can pretty much start to play. Oh, and a book or two maybe, right?
Book helps. As far as safety goes, you'd want gloves or else you will be colorful when you don't intend to be.
Ooh, good point.
Yeah, and a dust mask because the soda ash is a dry powder. It makes me cough, not necessarily everybody, but the dyes can, you can become allergic to them. So they're very fine powders. You don't want to breathe them.
Yeah. And you want to, do you want to do this outside, or are you doing this, you know, like I would think at least the first time you try it so that you don't get, you know, you get used to all of the products that you're working with?
It's not a bad idea. You know, if you have pets or small children, which we don't right now, you're going to have to take more precautions. I will mix up. You can store mixed dye solution in the fridge for a week or two. I wouldn't do that with little ones in the house because it looks like juice. So, you know, some common sense things there. But, yeah, do it, if you do it outside, you know, old table with a plastic drop cloth on it if you want. It, the dyes don't stain much.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of variables, too.
Right, but, right.
Yeah. You know, the plastic containers will rinse right out.
Well, I know when I did some dyes that were fine powder that I was using for wool, Cushing's, I think, that I actually put wet paper towels down on my counter so that if any of the loose dye was in the air and dropped, it, like, adhered to the wet paper towel. I don't know if that's a...
That's a great idea.
Yeah. That, you know, because they would fall or blow if otherwise, and that just sort of absorbed them and was one thing that a bunch of us did when we were nutty and dyeing things. Now, let's talk about the vat dye, because I'm on your website back on March 26th on your blog. It's dippitydye.blogspot.com. And on March 26th post, you've got pictures of the vat dyed fabrics. Tell me about that. They're absolutely amazing.
Oh, I was so lucky to be able to take a class with Ellen Noble. Oh dear, my brain just spaced. She has
It's
amazing, amazing work with vat dyes, and she was teaching at Prochemical. And there are fewer people that are involved in it because it's a little more complicated. It's kind of more of an advanced dyeing technique.
Okay,
but the dye bath uses lye, and you have to heat it up to 140, 50, 60 degrees. That's when you, so not where you're going to start, but I'm trying. You're on, said March 26th,
right? Yeah, I'm back on the March 26th post from last year, and you have some pictures of it, and they've got these great big sort of geometric-y almost shapes on the fabric.
Yeah, those are samples that Ellen brought to class, and they were just stunning. I just wanted to take them all home. and then the next best thing is to try and learn how to do it for yourself. So she's light years ahead of me, which is why she was teaching and I was taking the class, you know. But
so
I have
something gotten... people can progress to do shapes like that through a different process.
Yeah, the shapes are actually a result of how you clamp the fabric. She just uses square boards and folds the fabric up and clamps it. And so I've gotten some neat results. I've got a couple pieces on the website. And I've gotten some less than stellar results, we'll just say that. And, you know, it's always something to learn. But it also adds layers of color that you don't get other ways. If you scroll up to the, what's the date? April 5. Those are all my work, and they're pretty nice results, if I say so.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Big, huge. I mean, it's not like what I think of as dyed fabric. So I just like that they're all one of a kind, unique pieces.
And they all started out with the MX dyes. So, you know, it's a neat neat process to add. The vat dyes actually take color out and put color in at the same time, which is mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. Oh, my
gosh.
And
very cool.
Yeah. So do you ever do like a little test run if you're going to do a production? Because you sell your fabric. So do you test out something first, or do you now have enough experience, you just sort of go for it and have good results most of the time?
Oh, I've created some really hideous fabric patterns. I do have a lot of books with samples. I took a color mixing class and a discharge class with another great teacher named Carol Soderlund, and we came home with these great fat notebooks. And then you just start adding to them once you have that foundation. So I'll do quarter yards for samples, and often, you know, they come out okay, and maybe somebody will like them, so I sell a quarter yard, unless I just have to keep it. And then I'll move on up. Some techniques work better, you know, with a 45-inch square, say.
Right, right.
And it just, it's unmanageable with a great long piece of fabric. So, and I'm still learning stuff. I think dyers will keep learning until the day they hang up their spoons.
Hang up their spoons. There you go.
Hang up their spoons, yep.
Well, since you've been out teaching a lot and you do a lot with, you know, internet groups and everything, what are some of the, you know, questions that you get asked? I'm sure one of them must be about the vinegar and the salt and the setting of the dyes and how you get them to stop running, all that kind of ball of wax. What's going on with that?
Well, my mom told me years ago that, well, when you get something new and you're afraid it's going to run, you should soak it in vinegar or you should soak it in salt water before you wash it, and that'll take care of it. And I don't know if that was true then, but it's really not true now, especially when we're talking about MX dyes on cotton. When you're dyeing silk or wool, you do use acid, including vinegar. So if you boil it in acid, it might make a difference. But I'm not talking about that today.
Right, yeah.
So the thing with MX dyes is that you have to wash them out in blazingly hot water. When I teach, I talk about the can washing temperature, dishwashing temperature is a bit hotter, hot water, and then painfully hot with gloves on temperature. And then that's, for my hands at least, is in the 140, 150 degree range. And that's the temperature that you need to wash out fabric that's been dyed with MX. And if that's done correctly, and not just, you know, a lick and a promise, it shouldn't run. That said, I'm not perfect, you know?
Right. Because people do buy hand dyes, and, you know, they get them home. And, you know, should you always test them? Because you may not really know the people you dyed from, who did the dyeing, or you might buy them from a store who bought them from the dyer.
Right. I tell people I'm not perfect. You know, I have piles of fabric in different stages of being washed. So... you know, if something slips into the wrong pile, maybe it didn't get a second hot wash. So, yeah, if you have a pot, you know, if you dye, if you have one piece of fabric and you heat it up in a cook pot and then wash the cook pot out, it's not going to ruin the pot. If you're doing it day in and day out, you want a separate pot. But if you're not, if you're worried about it, put your chunk of fabric in the pot with hot soapy water and bring it up to, you can just heat it up on your stove. I don't do that with wool.
No. Yeah, right. Wool's a whole different animal. Yeah,
wool's a whole different story, right?
Yeah, the whole different story. We're just talking about cotton today. Okay,
yeah,
test them, the fabric, and if it still has some color coming out of it, you know, how many times would you sort of, you know, do this before you figured out there might not, you know, they might give up hope?
Really, one good hot wash, unless it's a very, very, very dark color, should do it. You know, dark fabric has more dye in it. So,
Well, I'm asking because I actually have some indigos that I purchased a long time ago, and I've never rinsed them in really, really, really hot water. So maybe that's what I need to do, because I've rinsed them a few times and they won't stop running.
Well, indigo, if it's real indigo, is a different, is actually a that kind of dye.
Okay.
So my general broad statements here, you know, regarding Procyon MX.
Oh, okay. Okay. So those are a different dye. Okay. Mm-hmm. Ah, that's very good to know. That's very good to know. So we want to get in some things before we're done here. You are teaching. You go out and teach. Do you have that on your website?
Yes. I updated my calendar on the dippydyes.com. There's no T in there, but I answer to that, you know. It's just Dippy.
Dippy.
Dippy dies, yep. So
okay.
It's on the calendar. It's got all my shows that are coming up, including Dye Boot Camp, which is the 3 hours, which is enough time to get the basics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And from there, you can go, you know, the rest of your life if you choose.
Mm-hmm. And then you also vent so people could come see your fabrics and
right.
talk to you, right?
Right. My first show is going to be at the Mid-Atlantic Quilt Festival down at Hampton, Virginia. And that's the end of February. So 5 weeks.
Yes. And I'm going to miss you. I won't be there this year.
Aww.
Sometimes I go down and just see the show. It's about 3 hours, 3.5 hours south of me.
Uh-huh.
But I won't make it this year. So what else is coming up for you?
Well, the week after that is the Quilt Festival of New Jersey, where I'm going to be teaching. So we'll be home. You know, briefly, and then back out to the show. So
good.
The shows are 4 days,
mm-hmm.
and when I'm done, then I rework my website and take off the things that have sold, and hopefully mm-hmm. add more things that are still around. And I'm hoping my goal for this year is to vend at Houston, and I don't know if I'll make it or not, but you need a goal.
That's right. And if you do, I'll come and see you because I'll be there.
Okay. Good.
Yes.
Well, I hope people that are listening will come and see me at Hampton and at Somerset. And
yes.
Don't have any speaking engagements for guilds lined up right now, but I'm open for that.
They could give you a call.
Yep. That's right.
Lisa, this has been so wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, Pat, thanks so much for having me on. It's really been a treat.
So everybody go out and visit Lisa Reber about dyeing fabric at her website, dippydye.com. And then her blog is dippydye.blogspot.com. We're going to take a little break and then we'll be back with another set of guests. This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Pam.
What have you been quilting lately?
I just finished a Lone Star quilt for my niece's wedding.
Oh, I can't wait to see the finished quilt.
Me too. I have so many finished tops that I'm really considering looking into a long arm of my own. Don't you have a handy quilter? I've heard good things about them.
I do, and I love my HQ18 Avante. No more UFOs at my house. I have so much space to work with, and it's so fast. The stitch regulator gives me perfect stitches every time, and the precision glide track systems makes quilting so smooth I could quilt all day.
I would love that. I've been looking at the HQ24 Fusion.
Oh, I think that would be perfect for you. It's got all the great HQ features of the Avante with more throat space. You'll love working with Handy Quilter. Their customer service is top-notch.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter, for quilters.
Moda Fabrics brings you the hottest new fabric lines for quilting. We work with more than 40 of your favorite independent designers, as well as in-house design staff to make sure you have the latest and greatest in fabrics. We're committed to creating high-quality products and providing excellent customer service. And for 35 years, Moda Fabrics has proudly supported the independent quilt shop. Visit your local independent quilt shop to see what's new from Moda Fabrics.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are going to talk to the authors of the book, Tile Quilt Revival. Now, this book has fascinated me from the cover right to the back. I mean, every single little thing about this book is like total love. I'm just so excited because both of the authors are here today, Carol Gillum Jones and Bobby Finley, and they're going to tell us all about their fabulous book and kind of things they're doing. So, hi, Carol. Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Bobby. So,
okay, Bobby. And Bobby, you and I met and we didn't even realize it. Or
that's
I didn't.
Right. It's been several years, but we did meet in Virginia.
Yes. Very cool. And Carol, I haven't met you yet.
No, you haven't. I live in Lawrence, Kansas. I'm sort of in the middle of everything.
Ah.
But for the record, I'm in California, but I used to live in Virginia.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about this book, because really, and I've heard the exhibits that you have had, you know, with the quilts from it are just, you know, top notch and out of this world. So how did you come about? Because I'm fascinated that there are old quilts done with this tile style. This is just incredible. How did you know that? Yeah, I know. Question of the day.
You know, the first one that I remember becoming aware of, this is Carol, is years and years ago when the quilt calendar, the engagement calendar.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Was published every year. There was a tile quilt in one of them that I was very enchanted with. It was so different from everything else, and I didn't know how it was made, and I kind of kept an eye on it. And it turned out that Bobby shared my fascination with them.
Ah, and you two met in a workshop? Is that what I read?
We actually met at a quilt retreat, an annual retreat in Northern California. And we met, we have never nailed down the date exactly, but it was either 1990 or 1991. And we were in the same workshop, work room, and we really admired each other's work and got to know each other through that and have collaborated lots of times and become close friends and authors since then.
So that was Bobby talking, right?
That was Carol.
Oh, that was Carol. Okay. So Bobby.
Yes.
So at some point, the two of you thought, you know, you would like to, do you decide to recreate one of those antique tile quilts? And first tell the audience, Bobby, what this style is, in case they haven't seen it yet.
Well, tile quilts are pretty obscure. We've managed to find, we just found number 26 that we can put on our list of tile quilts. But fortunately, they have been published as in the quilt engagement calendar, and they're in museums, the International Quilt Studies Center, the New England Quilt Museum, the Colonial Williamsburg Museums, all have a tile quilt in their collection. So what is it? So what is it? Random pieces of fabric, mostly random, so they could be a shape cut out such as a star, but random pieces of fabric are appliqued to a background and space left around them. So it gives the appearance of tile and grout, or grout around tile. And so that's the name that that actually I think historians and collectors have named them. We have no idea what the makers of these quilts, and one thing I left out is that most of them date to the last third of the 19th century. Mm-hmm. Mostly seem to have been made in New England, the ones that we're able to document. So that's basically a tile quilt.
And, I mean, one of them in your book has actually got the name Olive on it. It has the date 1895.
Yes.
It's fabulous. Oh, and it's got somebody else's name there, Alvo.
Well, Carol can tell you a little story about that quilt. we don't know the origin of that tile quilt. It's in a private collection now, and the person who owns it allowed us to take a photograph of it, included in the book, and we were very grateful for that. But we know about that quilt is that it surfaced in Nebraska in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Somebody bought it at a secondhand store and brought it to a quilt symposium in Lincoln, and it was published in Quilters Newsletter and sort of became known from there. But when I talked in Lincoln, Nebraska to the quilt guild there about tile quilts, I showed the slide of that, and I mentioned that it had come to light in Lincoln, or near Lincoln, but we didn't really know where it had been made.
And several people came up and told me afterwards that there is a town called Alvo, which is very close to Lincoln, very just southeast of Lincoln. And I said, well, what about the olive part? And they said, well, there is a little creek that runs through there that's called Olive Springs. So we, it needs a lot more research, but we sort of hope that there might be a, perhaps a Midwest origin for one of these quilts. But most of them we do know of are from the New England, from the northeast part of the United States.
So that I just love them. I have to make one. You know that now. You know, I'm just announcing it to everybody. I have to make one. And also, let me just tell people your blogs, because you have lots of really cool pictures on them. Carol's is Carol Gingham, Gilham Jones.blogspot.com, and it's on my blog.
Right.
And then Bobby's is Bobby Finley Tilequilts.blogspot. com. So did you decide to make one as friends, you know, together, and then the book evolved after, or did the book come first?
Well, the quilt actually came first, and we had no intention at all of writing a book. It was not even on our radar screen. But both of us...
We were both retired. We just wanted to make quilts.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. Yes. Too bad, huh? You know, you need a book now.
So we made our first tile quilt, and we worked on, it's in the, actually in the book. It's the one that's called Starry Orange Peel. Mm-hmm. And we both did blocks for it, and we did the, worked on the quilting together and selected the fabrics and so on. Had a wonderful time as a collaborative project. And our friend Deb Radman got really interested in that quilt and the history of tile quilts that we were learning more about as we went along, and where we had gotten the inspiration for that quilt, and really urged us to write a proposal for a book. So that's kind of where the book idea came from. But the quilt was definitely the first thing.
Now, have you seen out on the internet, which people did this for a little while, like a little segment of time, maybe a year ago, a bunch of them did sort of this tile quilt, but all with raw edge, because your edges are all turned under, aren't they, for applique?
Well, yes, they are, because at least I prefer the needle turn method of doing applique. However, in the book, there are instructions for both raw edge machine applique, turned under edge applique, and the infusing. So it's all there. But we, at least I, and I think Carol does too, we prefer the needle turn method.
The needle turn, it totally gives that more grout feel, because there's no threading or frayed edges that compete with the visual.
Right, and there's more depth to, you know, when you have that edge there turned under. It's not so flat, you know.
Ah, good point. So what about the background? What kind, are people generally using cream, or are they going all over the place? What's the theory on that?
Well, in my classes, they're going all over the place with my encouragement.
Ah, yes. Good teacher.
In fact, this is Carol talking, and we really do encourage our students to use whatever really enhances the tiles as their grout, and the grout is the background fabric. And in fact, Bobby, in one of the quilts that she made that's included in the book, used a plaid for her background fabric.
Oh, I have to go look for that one. Oh my gosh, a plaid, that would be really cool.
It's a pastel plaid, but it is a plaid.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, gives interest, right?
Yes. Yes.
So when you, when somebody wants to start this, I mean, both of your blogs you're just so generous to post all of these photos so people can get a feel for different options. When people start, what size piece do you recommend to try the technique on for a starter?
Well,
the patterns in the book are 10-inch patterns.
Okay.
Most of the blocks are 10-inch. And a 10-inch block stitches up very quickly. And so for a beginner, that's a nice size. We also encourage people to do 15-inch just to photocopy those at 150%.
Okay.
And the 15-inch blocks are, they're a little flashier, you know, they're just bigger and brighter. And if you're using large-scale contemporary prints, they work very nicely with a 15-inch block. They just take a little longer to stitch up.
Yeah, but sometimes you get, with the bigger pieces, you also get bigger curves, which for a beginner might be easier to stitch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thought.
Good point. That's a good point. Now, when you're looking for fabric, we have like, you know, like a minute and a half. So first, I'm going to ask you each the same one. So Bobby, when you're looking for fabric now, if you're going to do one of these, is there something you're zoned in on?
No, but I sure look at fabric entirely differently now that I've been making tile quilts. I walk in a shop and say, oh, tile quilt.
Tile quilt. So Carol, how about you? Are you, do you see something that you're looking for? How do you look at fabrics after doing these?
Well, you know, one of the things we found when we were working on developing this tile quilt technique is we just found that the wonderful big, large-scale prints that are available today are such a wonderful fabric to use for tile quilts. And it really will showcase them beautifully. The pieces are large and simple, and the grout can act as sort of a mediator between fabrics. So you have to do less thinking about blending colors, and because they just all seem to kind of work together. We like to really do multicolor quilts in these tile quilts, and they work very well with the background fabrics.
And I've noticed that I'm actually on Bobby's blog at the moment, and you must have done a class recently, and you have everything from like a rich black background that's got like jewel tones to bright, fun, to sort of a pinkish floral somebody did.
Yeah, it's just amazing what the variety of fabrics that people bring, and they all seem to work. It's really amazing.
Well, gals, this has just been just totally incredible. Are you still, Carol, are you still going to make another tile quilt?
Oh, sure.
Oh, why not? Huh? So, Bobby, how about you? Do you have another one in your future?
Oh, I'm sure. Yes. I have one that's in my brain. We'll see if it gets into fabric.
Well, thank you both for being here. I know you do a lot of other things besides this, so people can visit you and learn about your other work, and maybe I'll have you back on again. How's that sound?
All right. Thanks so much, Pat.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take a break. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. Be right back.
Win free stuff. Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
Come see what's cooking at the Moda Bake Shop website. You'll find free recipes for using the wide range of Moda pre-cuts from your favorite designers and quilt shops. We've got ideas for using a variety of ingredients, including honey buns, jelly rolls, layer cakes, charm packs, and more. Instructions with detailed step-by-step photos guide you through the recipes and the fun. New projects served up daily at modabakeshop.com.
Do you love free motion quilting but struggle to fit your project in a small throat space? The HQ Suite 16 is designed for you. With 16 inches of throat space, there is room to work on even a king-size quilt. The smooth surface of our height-adjustable table allows your project to glide under the needle with ease. The HQ Suite 16 is built with powerful HQ technology designed to handle all your quilting projects.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter for quilters.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have to say, I'm going to go share this on the American Patchwork and Quilting Facebook page because somebody posted one of their tile quilts on my Facebook page. So I'm going to go share it later over there so you can go and see her quilt. It's similar to the one on the cover of the book. So now we're going to talk about making small projects for your friends. I have designer Roseanne Kermes here. She's a regular contributor to the magazines and a regular guest here on the radio show, my buddy. So how are you, Roseanne?
Not too bad, Pat. How are you? Your show has been great so far. It's been fun to listen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Are you going to go dye some fabric? Didn't you just love that?
Yeah, it makes me want to do it because you know, I use a lot of hand-dyed wool, and it's very exciting to see what happens when you throw dye on fabric. Just to, you know, it makes it very unusual and very cool.
Yeah, and unique.
Yeah.
Could lead into things that you give your girlfriends, your fellow quilters, men or women, might enjoy some hand-dyed fabric.
Yeah, hand-dyed fabric that they could use for gifts for their friends or to make something just very special and just like I said, unique for one person. Because, you know, with hand-dyed fabric, you're never going to get the same thing twice. So
no.
I think that'd be a kind of a fun idea. But, yeah.
So. Now, you and I were chatting the other day because your studio, you have people come in and do projects and stuff, and you had a bunch of people coming in, and they were sort of shopping for their girlfriends, weren't they?
Yeah, we did a make and take over the weekend, and I thought it was really sweet. There was a woman who came in the day before, and she and her friend were going to come together on Friday, I think it was, and she asked me to let her know what fabric her friend picked for her project in case she wasn't there, so she could find coordinates to go with it and make something else for her sewing room and stuff. So I just thought that was sweet that she was able to think out far enough to, you know, to get a nice gift for her friend and, you know, to want to be able to do that to surprise her. That made me smile. So.
I know. Quilters love to do that, don't they? Just make, we did a road trip last year and the one gal made us all a little tote. I think it's probably the one Monica has on allpeoplequilt.com.
Oh, yeah, the tiny tote. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And she put a little water bottle in it and little candies in it. It was so cute.
Well, and I think quilters especially like something handmade because they know how much work goes into a project. You know, and when somebody gives them something handmade, it means a lot to them. I know for our quilt retreat or bus tours and stuff, I try to hand make a few things because I know that they're going to appreciate the piece and stuff. You know, one of the things I did is I went on my Facebook page for my store and asked my readers there what do they do for gifts for their friends. And I thought, you want me to tell you some of those things?
Yes. Share some of them because people were writing that they wanted, you know, I asked the same thing, but everybody wrote, like, oh, yeah, tell us some ideas. So, you know, they wanted your ideas, Roseanne. So,
yeah. Well, it seems like tote bags and table runners are a big thing. We have, there's a lot of different tote bag patterns out there. They're usually pretty easy to make. Like you said, that little tiny tote from Monica Snow, it was, it's just a fun, fast project that you can fill up with things. But anything that has to do with, like, organization. I had a friend of mine gave me a vinyl tote for my sewing supplies, like my rotary cutter and that kind of thing.
Ah.
Partial fabric and part vinyl so I could see inside. And that's a great gift, you know. You know, anything that helps people organize or it's kind of special. You know,
pin cushions are
fun because they're not that hard to make. You can make a bunch at a time. We have some of the people who come to our quilt retreat will make little gifts for the people who they know will be at their tables. And pin cushions are way up there, and so are needle keepers.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, you know, and wool needle keepers or sewing ones because they don't take a lot of effort, but there's a lot of thought in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but
when personalize them?
Yes. Yep. Sometimes they do, where they'll date them. I remember one quilt retreat. Somebody made a little sewing kit for everybody that was her friends, and she dated it. She put it, you know, Rosebud's Cottage Quilt Retreat, end of the year, and stuff. So that was kind of fun, you know, that they had a very personal memento, you know, for that mm-hmm. event mm-hmm. and stuff. I don't know about you, Wynn, but when I make gifts, the whole process for me is thinking about the person who gets it and wondering, you know, how will they react? Did I pick the right fabric? Do they like the gift? Are they going to use it? And
right,
that's
right.
What keeps me inspired to the end is, you know, the whole surprise thing of it, and just keeping that person in the front of your mind as you make it and stuff.
Yeah, and picking out what fabrics that your friend will like. I mean, I made a tote bag for my girlfriend Anne once with roosters, because at the time she really liked roosters, and you know, and when I see her use it, it's like, oh, there's the tote bag I made, Anne. You know,
yeah, and it's fun, especially when it's years later. There were a number of readers on my page too. They said that they actually made quilts for their friends. Because they know that a quilter will appreciate the effort that went into it. One even said that even though they quilt, there's no better gift than snuggling with a quilt that's been made by a friend. I thought that was kind of sweet. There was another reader. She made a quilt for everyone in her family for one Christmas, and her sisters and sister-in-laws also were quilters. So mm-hmm. they even more appreciated just the amount of quilts that she made. It sounded like it was a big family.
Right.
But the fact, you know, that they got something from her. I think quilters give away a lot of quilts, but nobody thinks to make them a quilt because they feel, oh, they can make their own.
Right,
and
right.
You know, it seems like we never get around to that, to making that one special quilt that's for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's always kind of doubly fun when it's from a quilter that you know.
I had one of the gals on my quilt group, my internet group, Wanda, wrote that she actually bought the quilt shop travel book. Mm-hmm. For gifts, even though she isn't making it. She said that when her friend was traveling, that her friend would think of her every time she opened the book when she was traveling.
Nice.
Isn't that cool? You could even put a bookmark in there. You could make a bookmark and put it inside.
Yeah, because you could even do a travel journal to put with mm-hmm. it if you felt like you wanted to make something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
your friend could record mm-hmm. their, you know, their experience at different quilt shops that they stopped at and stuff.
Yeah.
I had one reader who I love this idea, because it sort of is a gift, but it sort of gets your friend involved too. When she cuts a kit for herself, like when she mm-hmm. is cutting a project, she will mm-hmm. cut one for her friend as well and package it up. And then when her friend wants to sew, it's all ready. She doesn't have to think about it. She doesn't have to pick the fabric or do the cutting.
Yeah.
It's all right there with the pattern, and she can mm-hmm. just sit down and sew. That would be a great thing to do, like for a friend's weekend or a retreat, or maybe for something that for a friend that lives across the country. You both could be like doing it at the same time. Well, let's start on Monday, you know?
Yes, right,
and,
right.
Make a project together, even though you can't actually be together.
Well, you know, when thinking of that, plus making a whole quilt for somebody, I just went on one of the links that we were talking about on allpeoplequilt.com. And if you put in paisley squares and bars, it's a really simple quilt with rectangles that would be fun to cut. And you could even pre-cut those for your friend.
Oh, yeah.
If you were so inclined.
Well, yeah, and you could use jelly rolls or things on that, or like 2.5, you know, like strips or scraps mm-hmm, to, mm-hmm, and things
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that would be really good. Another thing that people do, which are like holiday type, you know, decorate, you know, every holiday has something you can decorate with. I think quilters, a lot of us like to decorate seasonally. So, I mean, you could do ornaments. I mean, in the spring, you could do like an egg table runner or, you know, stuff like that. That's not too time consuming.
We have a little tiny table runner at the store. And I had customers tell me that they were making them and wrapping them around a bottle of wine as a hostess gift.
Wow.
And somebody did it for their, a bunch of them get together for, like, a bunch of quilters for their, like, a quilters luncheon and stuff. And they made them to go at each person's table setting. You know, they folded them in half and put the silverware on top of them.
Mm.
So everybody had this little tiny table runner. that they could take home with them, and everybody looks different.
What's tiny? What size are we talking?
So I this one is. Let me think here. It's about, I want to say 7-8 inches across and maybe 20 inches long. Okay. I don't even think it's that long.
Yeah.
It's a little pattern that we have at a kit that we created and sell at the store. And it's just small and it's fast. It just has a few seams. And you can use lots of cute fabrics and you make it seasonal and stuff. But there's lots of other little small projects like that around there. It just depends on how much time you want to take to make it and stuff.
Now, people, we would love at American Patchwork and Quilting, if you're on Facebook, if you would go out to our Facebook page, American Patchwork and Quilting, just put that in the search box and share some things that you've done, and Roseanne and I will go out and look at it later.
Yeah, you know, maybe we can get somebody to put that list that I sent you of gift projects.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they can get that up on the Facebook page, too. The Facebook page is facebook.com/APQ magazine. And they're on Twitter as well. And I thought I saw them asking questions about gifts on Twitter earlier this morning. So, I don't know. I love presents. I look around my workroom here and, you know, I can see five things that people that are just in my sight, gifts that friends have made for me over the years. And I'll tell you, every time you see them, you think of that friend and, you know, the memories you have together. And I don't know. It's just, it's special. I love it.
Another thing that you've personally done, Roseanne, which I thought was real cute, is you made little pennants, like a little string of little that you could hang for decorating.
Yeah. Those are actually kind of fun to make for gifts, too. I've got a couple different ones, and they're just basically triangles hooked onto ribbon or extra binding or things. And you can... you know, you can personalize them. You can put different letters. Like for Valentine's Day, you could do L-O-V-E. And that's something that you could just fold up, throw in an envelope, and mail to somebody just as a little special thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, that's a good idea because mailing it is nice. Don't we all like to get something in the mail?
Oh, sure do.
Yeah.
So, especially, you know, cause I think when you get something in the mail, it's like it just lets you know that on this day, several days ago, somebody was thinking of you at that minute, you know?
Yeah.
And it's such a nice surprise. I like to get gifts in nice, pretty boxes, but I also love to get them in the mail from different
friends
and stuff.
The mail is good.
Yeah.
Well, Roseanne, this has been awesome. We're done.
Great. We're done.
I know. We're done. We gave you all the ideas. Visit Roseanne at her blog, rosebuzzcottage.typepad.com. Come back next week to listen to a new show at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Thank you, Roseanne.
Thanks, Pat. I'll talk to you again soon.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.